Hello, Internet. It's Tori. You're listening to the Cosmere Deep Dive Podcast. For updates on when episodes go live, follow us on Twitter and Facebook. To join the discussion, visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/CosmereCast, where you'll find an invitation to our Discord server. Thank you for listening, and please, enjoy the show.
Hello, and welcome to the Cosmere Deep Dive Podcast. I'm your host, Mike. Joining me this week are Craig.
Hi, how's it going?
Dave.
This is Craig.
And Tori.
Hello, Internet.
And we start every week with Good Thing, so real Craig, take it away.
I have some doubts about the thing that not Craig said. All right, so this week I got another game for you guys.
Why would Craig lie to you, though?
Okay. Anyway, I have a new game for you guys. It's free to play. But it is not one of those crappy free-to-play games. But no. This one, actually, I think I was exposed to way back when Kongregate used to exist and Flash used to exist. So this was like, I don't know, 10 years ago or something.
Someone flash and expose themselves to you?
No. Remember there was this Adobe Flash player thing that people would make games for? Yeah, that. So it's a Risk, as in the board game Risk. Clone, but it is much, much better than just simple Risk before I like turn everybody away. It is called, so the game that I played originally is called Warlight, but the new one that is my good thing is called Warzone. Warzone. It is free to play. Here's what it is. They have a ton of maps. There's like a single player campaign mode that has lots of different, like, so it's not just the simple this is Risk. So for those of you who don't know, the way Risk works is that you have regions or areas of the Earth, the map of Earth, and as you own these regions, it will generate armies for you. And these armies are what you use to go take over other regions. So that's pretty much it. There's like some math and dice rolls, I think, involved whether you can take it over or not.
Dice rolls.
So one, the RNG aspect, out the window. It is all very standard. If you have X number of armies, you can beat Y number of armies. So it's very simple about what beats what. There is a priority mechanic, so you sort of take turns. So your orders get mixed in with the other player's orders. So you might say take over this region, and then the second player comes in and takes it over after you, just because that's when they structured their orders. The thing, but that is it simply. Getting like a combined area typically is a good bonus. So if you get all of the United States, for example, you'll get more armies that are generated. Now, that's just how the base game works. As I mentioned, there's a single player mode. It has like a good, I don't know, like 300 maps or something, and they're all different. They're like, there's some fantasy themed ones, there's some alternate Earth history maps. Like, it doesn't, it could be something weird as well. Like, there's one where you're like a SWAT team or something taking over a building, and like that, it's neat, it's cool. And then they have special rules as well, so it might be like you can't see how many armies are in the space next to you, and that makes it more difficult because then you have to decide what you can do, what can't you do, that sort of thing. Or it might be like the enemy AI has a giant army like of 400 strong, keeping in mind one army is like the default of what some places can generate, and it has 400 on one spot, and you have to beat it. That sort of thing. It makes it interesting. There's an idle game, so if those of you who like idle games, there's an idle game mode, which still uses the same sort of maps, but it's not like it's a competition, at least not the base idle game. There is a multiplayer idle mode as well. I have no idea how that works, but that's a thing. And of course, there's also a multiplayer mode where you just play against other players. Anyway, really good. It's free. You know, it's worth a try, in my opinion. I like that there's a single player campaign mode. And I like the idle game. I've been playing it for the past couple of weeks. So it is called Warzone. I will link it in our thingamabob, our Discord.
All right, Craig's was the Pizza Hut Pizzone. Fake Craig, what's yours?
Where did you pull that from? Oh, man. Fake Craig.
He owned the zone, and so it's the Pizzone.
Oh, man, my good thing this week is ointment that makes you feel less old, but the problem is it makes you smell like toothpaste. But it makes you feel less old.
Oh, you know, are you rocking some tiger balm?
I was going to say tiger balm is what you need.
No brand affiliations, and we're not sponsored by anyone. So just generic ointment that makes you feel less old.
Okay.
But makes you smell like toothpaste.
I do tiger balm when things are super dire, but I can't eat if I'm using that stuff. It smells so bad. So if things aren't quite dire, I go with icy hot balm because the peppermint smell is actually really nice.
Yeah, I basically have the store brand knockoff of icy hot. That's a couple weeks ago, my knee really hurt from working, and it was the first time I ever tried it, and I was just like, all right, I can't use if I don't use this sparingly, I'll get addicted to it. So I'm just like, only if it's really bad do I use it. But man, there's a reason we're recording late today, and it ain't just because of the Ren Fair.
All right, I guess
what
it's
did
my
you
turn.
Say that? Tiger balm.
Tiger balm. Yes, it is. That is the good stuff. But again, I personally can't eat if I've used it. Like, the smell is just overpowering. I can't.
I actually really like the smell myself, so your mileage may vary. It comes in a little tiny jar. You only need a little bit of it. And they generally carry it at, the health food store. Just whatever health food store you've got in your area.
Yeah, there's white and there's red. I forget which one's stronger. The red is supposed to smell like cinnamon, but it, again, too medicinally, couldn't eat. Anyway, I think it's my turn. So my good thing this week is two things by Kevin Smith that are on YouTube. The first is the short The Flying Car, which if you haven't seen it, is wonderful. It's Dante and Randall from Clerks just driving through some traffic and having a conversation. And it's about 6 minutes long, and it basically tells you everything you need to know about each of their characters, without having to watch a 90 minute to 2 hour movie. What's that, Dave?
I liked the cartoon.
The cartoon is good. The other thing that is by Kevin Smith that is on YouTube that I'd like to talk about today is the film Dogma. It's not officially on YouTube, but somebody has uploaded it. And since the rights for it are held by Harvey Weinstein, who is a terrible person who is in prison, it's not getting streaming anytime soon, so enjoy it on YouTube.
Ooh, I will. I was just thinking of that the other day.
Yeah, it's a real good movie. There's some bits of it that haven't aged well, as is true with all of Kevin Smith's early stuff. But yeah, it's I think my favorite of his things. So that's my good things this week. So I think Dave, you're a Kevin Smith aficionado sometimes, right?
Sometimes is about right. I did see Dogma in theaters when it came out. I remember liking it when I was young, but I haven't seen it in a long time. I do watch Comic Book Guys every now and again. He's in it sometimes, but it's mostly the guys that own his store and run his store. But yeah, I guess, I don't know. I was a fan of Kevin Smith when I was a teenager, but I haven't watched, Dogma or Mallrats or anything very, very recently. So I can't say that I still am, but, I would, if somebody, put on a Kevin Smith movie, I'd probably watch it along with them.
Well, sounds like now's your chance to reacquaint yourself and, start with The Flying Car. If The Flying Car doesn't work for you, then Kevin Smith won't work for you.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's just 6 minutes of your day instead of, 2 hours.
Yeah, and I can farm whatever while I watch it.
You can become a farmer. Yep. All right, Tori, are you going to tell us about Dave being a farmer?
I'm being a farmer right now. I've got Stardew Valley in the background. My good thing this week, a few episodes ago, I mentioned A Court of Fae and Flowers on the streaming service Dropout. And I had said that Dropout is also a good thing. Today, I'm going to talk about another Dropout show. It's called Game Changer. So it's a game show where the rules change every show, every episode. It starts off with the host, Sam Reich from College Humor, being like, you guys know how the game is played, right? And everyone says, no, no, we have no idea. We don't know the rules. And then they just get thrown into this game show without knowing the rules. And they have to learn the rules by playing. And it's hilarious. I have not laughed so hard since the original Whose Line Is It Anyway went off the air. Like, it is hilarious, and I love every bit of it. And there are several seasons available, I think about five. It's worth your time. So if you've got an extra, I think it's like $5 a month to subscribe to Dropout. There's lots of good content on there, and that's one of the things. It's my new favorite, like, I'm just gonna sit here and I'm gonna watch one episode of something. That's what I'm watching.
Oh, the people that host Drawfee are in some of those Dropout shows. Like, they used to work for College Humor and stuff.
I think I saw a clip of part of an episode where ProZD was Werner Herzog as Spider-Man. Does any of that sound right?
No, I haven't seen that.
I slightly remember a Dropout commercial, not sure if it's the same show, with ProZD's voice in it. Does that count as maybe Mike's right?
I don't know. I don't know who ProZD is.
Whoa, well, hold on.
We'll fix that
for
you later.
We gotta fix that.
Okay. Well, meanwhile, I will find some clips of Game Changer that I can share in our Good Things channel. But yeah, that's my good thing this week.
Hey, Mike, can I change my good thing to ProZD and link to one of his compilations?
You can do the second part, but the first part's already gone.
Well, that's okay. I will link it anyway.
Obligatory reference to elixirs that we've actually made in this show.
All right. I think we're done with good things, so let's do bad things. And by that, I mean chapters. Dave, you've got some chapters to tell us about.
You've got some chapters to do. Which are they? The end? But where does the end start?
One of the numbers until the end. It's, yeah, book.
Cord, you're swimming the wrong way. Oceans.
19? I think we're starting with 19.
19? That's like the last.
I believe it's 18.
All right,
yes, 18. It's 18 to the end.
Okay. Chapter 18 of Dawn Shard by Brandon Sander.
Sander's daughter.
What is happening right now?
Chapter 18. Better armored than a grub. It's political. Stop saying sure all the time. Did that get annoying enough that I wrote a second bullet point saying that? So yeah, the first scene of this chapter, there's some armor, and it's better armored than a grub. Like from Hollow Knight, I guess?
Something's like an upgrade to me.
Yeah, but what if you have Baldur Shell in shape of... Never mind. What happened in this scene?
And I'm going to have to pull up my notes.
All right, next scene. Risen isn't ready yet, but she has to. Nickley isn't good enough at subterfusion, and he's the best one. Fa-la-la-la-la-la-leaky-nor. Ancient pact of the seven peak. Guardians of life. Cracks in the illusion. Nickel sit at the table. So in this scene, you know, is this a scene where Cord tries to trick Nickley into fighting her to the death? But she automatically wins because he's not allowed to kill her.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's like, see, I tricked you, just like the heroes in the old stories. it was cute. And then Cord is like, well, Risen, I tried. Well, they're supposed to be ancient guardians of life, so maybe you can use that in your negotiation to convince him not to kill us. Next scene. Huyo gets a shard hammer. You know what that means.
Every problem looks like a shard nail?
No. It means he hates the Lopin.
The Lopin is a shard nail.
Yeah, because you can only swear the third ideal. If your third ideal is, I will protect those, even those I hate. And, like, the Lopin is just getting so annoying. And Huyo eventually swears the third ideal and summons a shard hammer. And I'm like... Yeah, he kind of hates the Lopin right now, I guess. That's how he gets the shard hammer. All right. Next scene. What have you done to the Dawn Shard, Risen? Craig, what have she done to the Dawn Shard?
Do you actually want me to tell you, or...
What happened in this scene?
It didn't happen in this scene. It happened at the end of the last chapter we recorded.
Yeah, but what has she done to it?
She read it. She read it.
Well, she's a woman, so it checks out.
She can read.
She's a Vorin woman, I think. Thalen or Vorin, right? Anyway, yeah, that's chapter 18 for you.
Actually, I think Vorin is specifically only Yaakoved and Alethi.
No, the Thalens are Vorin.
There's some Vorin influence to talk about stuff and stuff.
There are 5 Vorin kingdoms. Thalen is one of them.
Yaakoved, Carbranth, New Netanan, and Thalen.
Netanan.
So, okay, Thalens are Vorin.
Don't forget about Parshendland.
But they're not Vorin. They are specifically not Vorin.
Don't forget Shinovar.
But
don't forget Ashweather Set City.
The Alethi look down on everybody else who is Vorin because they aren't the right kind of Vorin.
Like Evie. Alright. Any questions for chapter 18?
Isn't it fun how the Lopin's banter here would fit perfectly well in, like, any sort of military fantasy, like, dark humor.
Like aliens?
Kind of middle-of-battle jokes. Like, it completely fits with all of those. But in this series, we get a scene where like, clearly he's too mean. And Huyo is like, well, I guess I'll become more powerful so I can save this jerk.
Yeah, it fits. Gancho.
So, next chapter?
The next chapter after chapter 19. Whatever one it may be. Oh, wait. We just did 18. I spoiled it. The next chapter is chapter 19. Huyo, no more Stormlight. Next scene. Chiri Chiri stands up for Risen. Chiri Chiri is older than she let on. Risen now has something to trade with the Iamians. We can hide the Dawn Shard inside the mind of a random person. The humans will believe the official story, but in order to fool Nikki's enemies, we need another layer, like an onion or an ogre.
Ogres have layers, onions have layers, parfaits also have layers.
Yeah. Trade the soul casters for espionage training. Got it. The Dawn Shards are commands, the will of a god. So there are multiple Dawn Shards, apparently, because they mentioned Dawn Shards plural. It's interesting. I wonder if the Dawn Shard is like a shard. I know I've mentioned this before, but curious.
Well, which shard? There are so many things called shards in these books, man.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, in the way that Ruin and Preservation and Odium and Honor are shards.
That is closer to being correct.
They're shards. They're not shards of Adol Nalsium. They're shards of Dawn.
Yeah. We'll discuss this in the overview, I think.
Well, we're not doing an overview of this book. This is it.
Yep.
Let me check the diagram.
That means I need to buy Rhythm of War, I think.
Or get it from your local library. Or you could just borrow mine. No, seriously, if you need to, though, you could borrow mine.
Oh, yeah. Then how are you going to read along?
I'll probably just pick up the ebook.
Are you done checking the diagram?
Oh, yeah. I'm ready for you.
Said hold on. I was waiting for you to let me continue. Okay. Like an onion or a parfait.
Okay, I guess we'll talk about Dawn Charts at the end of this episode.
Onion parfait.
That's what Mike got out of that.
Yeah, banana and a juice and onion parfait flavor.
You know, there's a vendor at the Oklahoma Renaissance Fair that does like a barbecue parfait, except instead of like ice cream or yogurt or whatever, it's mashed potatoes. So it's like mashed potatoes and barbecue and just, yeah, it's really good.
So it's a savory trifle.
Yeah.
Not to be confused with a Savoy truffle, the Beatles song.
Indeed. And completely different from an octopus garden.
Thankfully. What, who's swimming around in an octopus's garden feeling happy and safe?
It would depend on the type of octopus, really.
And the type of garden. Like, I guess if it's like Squiddly Diddly.
John and Ringo and Paul and the other one.
Yeah, the good one. You left out the best one.
Pete? Yep.
Well, he's literally the best one, but the most talented one is George Harrison. Although, I'll say John Lennon might be a better songwriter than George Harrison, but George Harrison's the best musician. All right, what are we talking about? The things under the ocean? The octopuses with the garden from First of the Sun?
We were talking about parfaits.
Ah, yes. Intent and command. Undo addle nauseam. Uh-oh, don't do that. Oh, yeah, they mentioned that the dawn shards were used to undo addle nauseam. That's right. So they're like negative shards, I guess. I don't know. We have a deal. As long as Risen doesn't become a radiant. And only three sailors had to die. Dawn shard bearer. Command. The power to change. All right. Details.
Craig. You have been wanting to talk about Dawn Shards for, like, 3 years now. Go for it.
Hey, Dave. You remember Warbreaker?
Like a year ago.
You don't remember Warbreaker? There, Vasher gives a little bit of information about how to do the, how to use breath to, you know, cast spells. Do the thing. And he describes it as, you have an intent in your mind that what you want to accomplish, and you speak words which are a command. So you have an intent and you have a command.
And
that is how.
And you have color and you have breath. Those aren't important. I don't know why I brought them up.
We don't care about those.
Well, I do remember when Risen takes on the Dawn Shard that she did get some edgely seeming powers, like she was able to hear more clearer, or have perfect pitch,
yes, like that. But that's something that Warbreaker will help you explain why that's happening.
But some sort of heightening or something related or similar to heightening.
She has reached a higher heightening. That was the implication, because she's holding a ton of investiture.
Right. So having heightening. Having investiture gives you heightening, not necessarily having breaths.
Correct.
So
having the investiture within your body is what gives you heightening. Endowment's investiture is special because you're able to hold it. Typically, as we see in the Radiance, for example, they leak Stormlight, so they can't exactly hold on to a large amount of investiture over a period of time. Endowment's the weird one that you can just hold on to it.
It's kind of like how burning tin lets you hear good. And if you burn tin a lot, you hear gooder.
So with Allomancy, that's actually a very similar thing. Like, you get a burst of power. You don't maintain that power within your body. The only place it can be stored indefinitely is in metals.
Well, so metals have higher heightenings?
Well, the metals aren't invested. That's the weird one. Allomancy's a little bit weird. You actually get the investiture from Preservation or Harmony's body.
What if you are tapping a metal mind? Then there's no limit to the amount of investiture that you can take
because
out of.
Because that's
mind.
An N neutral type. So you're actually you've invested. So what you've done is you took a trait, you turned it into some sort of investiture, which is stored in the metal mind, and then when you extract it, when you tap it, you're reconverting that investiture the opposite direction into the trait.
Okay, so what if you had a metal mind that had like a billion, jillion Craigs of investiture in it, and then you tapped into it, and you tapped a lot of it, like
all at once,
like a mega. Yeah, but I mean, not all at once, but enough that you could be holding that investiture for a couple seconds. Would you have a higher heightening during those couple seconds while you're drawing from the metal mind? If there was enough.
That is a good question. That's a really good question. I think it depends on if. So my belief is that the thing stored in the metal mind is investiture, but once it's put back into your body, it's not investiture anymore. It's converted into whatever trait is stored by the metal mine itself. So in that case, the answer would be no, you don't have any change in heightening because you're not actually storing investiture. You just have the trait, whatever it is, whatever it happens to be. But I could be wrong.
How do gold mines work if it's not investiture? Like if your healing is not investiture, but it's it's related to connection, or rather identity, right?
Healing in the Cosmere has been tied to identity, correct?
So tapping into a gold mine will
It's changing, well, because we've seen it over time. So it's the natural body's process of healing over a period of time that you're receiving. So yeah, in general, from what I could tell, when you receive investiture, or sorry, when you're Verucamus tapping a certain metal mine, it's not investiture when it's back in your body. You're not drawing in investiture and then converting that investiture into the trait. When you're tapping the metal mine, it's turning into the trait that you need.
Go on, Mike.
The thing I was saying was that basically it's not entirely analogous to heightenings, because it's such an like an explosive burst of power that does not stick around for very long.
Okay.
Like, Stormlight is the closest, because you can hold Stormlight for some amount of time in your body. It's not like an instant usage. But even then, people are super leaky.
And I don't think we've actually seen them draw very much from the gems itself. Like, if you look at the heightenings, I actually have to pull up the chart here, because it's been a bit. But it's like, what, 500?
I think 100 is the first heightening. Okay.
50 is aura recognition, which wouldn't really do anything. That's like bronze sight. But 200 would be perfect pitch. So you need 200, and then you can hear things perfectly, which you wouldn't notice necessarily when you're out in combat. 600 breaths is for perfect color recognition. So if one of our Knights Radiant happened to draw in 600 gems, assuming a gem is equivalent to a single breath, which it might not be, it actually... what's in a gem might be smaller than what's in a breath.
Or bigger.
I would err on the other way, though, if anything. But let's just say it's one-to-one correlation here. 600. And we've never seen them draw that many gems. Like, they have a pouch full of gems, and there's, like, what? Like, 100 in there at most?
Yeah, it's possible that Radianism doesn't even let you hold the amount of investiture that Breathalyzer does.
Anyway, so let's... this is all interesting, but I want to get back to Dawn Shards. So,
real quick, do you need a connection to Edgeley to draw to take breaths?
I don't think so. Just because it would be kind of wild for everyone on the planet to have an investiture giving connection at that level.
I mean, okay, but we have Hoyd. Hoyd has breaths, right?
Hoyd does have breaths.
He actually has a connection to the person Edgeley. You know, not necessarily the shard endowment, right?
I think specifically endowment allows someone else to get a breath. Like, it basically comes with its own connection component, because that's what endowment does.
Like the rings from Southern Scadrial.
Unfortunately, I can't... there doesn't seem to be a word of Brandon on that. So that could be a good question to ask him. If just back anybody can get a breath. So if you guys need a question to ask, there you go. So, back to what I was saying. So... what Vasher described, the way that, what the heck is it called? Biochromatic?
Awakening.
Awakening? Awakening, that's right, yeah. So, what he calls it, you have to have an intent, and you have to have a command. That also applies to everything in the Cosmere that is called a shard. So, we have two things that are called shards. There's the shard holders that we've seen, a la Preservation and Ruin and Odium and all these others. Those are intents. Those are specifically the intent of whatever the shard happens to be. This has been described to us from Ruin, I believe. He talks about having the intent of Ruin, because that's just what he's holding. So I know we've seen it in writing. I can't exactly point you to where it is, but those shards are the intent. And what happens with a shard holder is that over time, the intent overrides the base personality of the person. So in the beginning, the person has a lot of influence over the shard. That's how it was in the beginning for AT and Lyris, which were the Preservation and Ruin. That's how they were able to more easily work together to actually create in the beginning. But over time, the intent sort of started asserting itself and would override the personality of the people holding it until eventually... they became just the intent.
Is that how preservation was able to lie to ruin? Because it was still under, you know, when Alaris put the plan into action, he still had more.
I think he had a little bit more of his personality there. It's I can't say it's like a complete 100%. It's just you're not like preservation needed Vin to do what she did because there was no way he'd be able to kill anybody. Period. Like he needed to preserve. Like there was just he could not act out anything beyond that intent. Think of it closer to how Marsh was acting when Ruin was sort of controlling him. Like basically there was nothing Marsh could have done because he had so many spikes, but then there was that tiny little bit, just enough that he could, you know, rip out the earring. That was it. That was the 16. Amount he could do. 16. So anyway, all the shards, they're intent. The Dawn shards are commands, and the one that Risen got is the command of change. There's four commands, a la okay. four different so Dawn command, shards.
Command isn't generally the power to change. This particular Dawn shard had that command of change.
This is the Dawn shard of change.
Okay. Change
There's
isn't
three others.
General isn't like a general thing for all Dawn shards. Okay.
Correct.
We don't think so anyway. Would you like to speculate about what the other three Dawn shards might be?
Stay the same, side to side, and vertical.
You're thinking of roll, pitch, and yaw.
Yeah, and breaks.
Do a barrel roll.
Okay, there's change, and then there's dollars, and credit, and Bitcoin.
Bitcoin doesn't count.
Okay, so I personally think that one of them is probably destroy. And I think that one might be in something we've seen.
Oh, so you don't think change can take care of the destroy? Oh, because of
Nightblood. Nightblood, the best
because
Dawn
Nightblood.
Shard.
Yeah, I think Nightblood is a Dawn shard hidden in a sword. I think that's why destroy had to be part of his command. And then evil was sort of intended to temper that, but he's a sword. He doesn't know what evil is.
Are there four different types of Dawn shards or four Dawn shards?
There's four Dawn shards, which are four different commands. And the only thing we know is that at least one of the four Dawn shards is different from all the rest. Whatever the heck that means, that's what the word of Brandon said.
So four.
Clearly, the third one is stick.
Oh,
so
yeah.
If you remember,
stays the same. He's the stay the same Dawn shard.
If you remember, there was that mural. You it mentioned that there were four sections of this circle, like it was split into four quarters, and then each of those were split into four pieces, which gives us our magic number of 16.
Oh, I know.
That's the breaking of the Adonalsium into the 16 different shards that we have, and it's the four commands a la Dawn shards that were used to do so.
Okay, bro. There's a circle with four sections, and each section is a command. It's Simon.
We figured it out.
I mean, it's physical, mental, temporal, and enhancement.
Oh my gosh, I forgot about that. It's been a while since we Allomancy.
Yeah, and in Shazmar, it's actually Bop It.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, for... Oh, okay. Well, 16 is the number of preservation, but 16 is also the number of shards. Well, yes. Originally, when they shattered Adonalsium.
So, from what we could tell, preservation, like the number 16, like, that's the number we associate with him. But there's also 16 metals. There was everything 16. So, yes. That's why 16 was important. 16. It just happens to be that there's also 16 shards. So someone had to be number 16, you know?
Someone had to be last.
That was preservation. Yeah, so that's the difference between an intent and a command. And now we've seen them on screen. And just to confuse everything, it's another thing that's called a shard. By the way, we thought it hilarious when you were trying to figure out what kind of shard it was when the name of the book was Dawn Shard. Yeah. We enjoyed that.
Well, it's just a name.
It is just
so. A name. What's a Dawn Shard?
It is a command. And one of the four fundamental commands of creation that were used to shatter ad nauseum.
So there are four commands, but we only know this one.
We only know one, correct.
Okay, and there are four Dawn Shards, or not four, but those Dawn Shards are each splintered.
No, the Dawn Shards aren't splintered.
So there are actually four. There's not like a couple of change ones.
No.
Not that we know of anyway.
There are four. We don't even know if they can be splintered like the actual shards can be.
Can shard blades splintered?
I guess we'll find out when Risen dies in book four.
Wow. Calling it now.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Let's move on to the epilogue, because the epilogue has some good stuff.
Epilogue. Thanking rocks is easier than thanking Huya, and the Lopin will protect people, sure, even from himself.
I think he used it.
Yeah.
He said the shore.
As the cheeky. So I just, you know, there was some other stuff I kind of like wasn't free to take notes, but I read it right before recording time, so I figured I would remember it. And that was last week. So I might need some help here, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, the Lopin and Huya have a conversation where the Lopin's like, hey, Huyo, couldn't help but notice that you looked right at me and then became a third level Windrunner and then protected me. So what's up with that, bud?
He's like, you hate me? And Huyo's like, well, sometimes. But, you know, just sometimes his jibing can be hurtful, even though he doesn't mean to hurt people.
It's probably like
what he says and when he interrupts people.
It's like, I will protect those I hate, even the if they drive me up a wall or something.
He says, I will protect those who hate even... Or he says, I will protect those even from myself. Or something.
No, Hoyos. I'm talking about what Hoyos
is. I don't remember his specific words that he said, but...
We don't get to see him. He doesn't tell us.
Well, I think we get the idea.
So I'm saying, it's probably like, even if they drive me up a wall, those are the ones I protect.
Okay, it's like he probably said something like that.
Alright, according to the Coppermind, back at the ship, Lopin and Huyo discussed the third ideal. Lopin congratulated his cousin on beating him to the ideal, although struggled to do so as he had an inkling that Huyo's oath had been related to him and thought Huyo might harbor ill will for him. Huyo, however, explained that he did not hate Lopin, and that the third ideal didn't have to involve hatred, although the constant ribbing and teasing from his cousin could be a bit much.
Yeah.
So yeah, we don't get the exact wording, but it's...
Or thanking rocks is easier than thanking Huya.
I will protect anyone who needs it, even the Lopin, I guess, if I have to.
Yeah. Yep.
Sounds correct.
So Red Green would make a pretty good Windrunner, right?
The guy with the suspenders?
Yeah.
I haven't heard of that guy in a while.
Dave, you're not telling me that you weren't a Red Green aficionado growing up?
My dad watched it a lot, so I think I've maybe caught a little bit. It's basically like Home Improvement, right?
Yeah, but with like less toxic masculinity. I'm a man, but I can change if I have to, I guess.
See what he says.
If you guys want, I think we can let Dave listen to the bullet points that I have.
Ooh, yes, let's.
I mean, do you have any words of radiance, or not words of radiance?
Rhythm of War. I'll make sure if there happens to be any related to Rhythm of War, I don't read them.
White Sand.
Or you go ahead and do read them and just don't explain the context.
You're like, hey, this one was neat. I wanted to preserve it.
Preservation. Okay.
Chapter 18. Wait, am I good to do this now? I should ask that.
Yeah, go nuts.
Should we play the thing first?
No, this isn't. This is. We only do that for your spoiler.
No, the listeners might want not to be spoiled, I guess.
I mean, presumably any listeners that care about spoilers would be at the same at the same place as Dave. And is that a fifth host?
That is a fifth host. Say hi, Ina. That's my water. You don't need my water. Okay, sorry, guys.
No. Bring her back on. We like her more than you.
She's going upstairs. It's too late. Time for bed.
Ada, did you enjoy the Renaissance Fair?
I think she did. She did nap today, so that made it hard. But she did get to meet a unicorn, and she got to see a real-life mermaid.
I'm glad the Renaissance Fair is historically accurate as it always was.
Oh, Dave, you'll like it. The theme for this weekend was Time Traveler Weekend. So they had you know, Doctor Who's TARDIS set up on the field somewhere. They had some people were dressed up as, you know, Star Trek from Starfleet. They had Bill and Ted walking around. That wasn't official. That was just some people. Officially, I didn't see any of the actors dressed as any of these people, but it was still time travel.
And Ren fairs have never been about historical accuracy. For that, you want the Society for Creative Anachronism.
Yeah, this is just all in good fun.
Wait, isn't anachronism the exact opposite of historical accuracy?
No, they're an actual organization, and that's what you're looking for. Ren fairs are the theme park version.
Yeah. Anywho, I can read my bullet points.
Yeah, go ahead. You keep interrupting us.
Okay. It was very important. We had to invite our fifth host on. First quote, "The Mother of Machines," Nickley said, it like a distinctive title. This was talking about Navani, and I just thought that was a neat name. Wait, what? Hold on a second. My bullet points are weird.
Your bullet points are a jumble.
No, it didn't. I skipped one.
If
okay.
Greg explains my bullet points, who will explain his bullet points?
Anyway, continuing. I have to read it first before I read it out loud. Okay. This is happened to the Lopin. Something hit him in the back. This is at the very beginning. Cold enough that it made him jerk upright, stunned, unable to move as he felt something leached from him. His Stormlight. So I wanted to highlight this is how it's leeching from him, and it reminds me of the Alemannic ability to leech, which is the whatever the heck goes with aluminum. I forget which metal it is. But the leechers that we saw back in Era 2. Just another way. It's a way to leech investiture off of someone. Okay. Continuing then. Feel free, you guys. So Dave, this is new, what we're doing. Ooh. I should describe it to you. And people who don't normally listen to our spoiler time. So this is my bullet points. My bullet points are just direct quotes that I highlighted certain passages that I thought were interesting because I wanted to discuss it. And usually what happens is I'll read it and I pause a moment to see if like anybody has something to say. And if not, I just keep going.
And gotcha. We never have anything to say. It's awkward, which is very funny to me.
Are you going to ask something else, Dave? Okay. Now we were talking about Rock, the character Rock. What?
Who?
I'm not reading his name. Someone
else can say. I can tag in here. Numahukumakiaki Ayalunamore.
Okay. Cord is describing him, and she describes him as he who drew the bow of hours at the dawn of the new millennium, heralding the years of change. Like what is this title here?
Well, he broke like his traditional family role by drawing the bow.
No, I don't think they're talking about that bow.
No, this is almost certainly a thing that happened back in the Peaks.
Yeah.
Oh.
This happened before he drew the Bow of Hours, whatever that is, and
maybe
at the dawn
of
the new millennium.
They're Egyptian. It's actually Bow of Horus.
Okay. And then continuing with Cord, they don't seem to know about the ancient treaties, Cord whispered. And in truth, those treaties were made with other gods. I had hoped the gods who sleep not would be similarly bound, but now I am not certain. So this is the fighting, like, hey, you can't kill me. Oh, I got you. Who did they? So more than likely, they have some kind of treaty with Spren because, you know, they have access to cultivation perpendicularity there. But they call a lot of things gods. So it's sort of like maybe, but it could be something else. All right.
I'm just trying to think of like what could qualify that she might be talking about. I don't know. Elantrians?
They could have a treaty with Elantrians from the Eyrie, perhaps?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I don't know why they would think they were gods, though, because they're people.
Well, that's my thing. It seems like everything, especially if it comes out of the perpendicularity, is probably a god. Like, that just seems to be the way they think.
Okay, they have naming conventions, but they know that Spren aren't actually gods. They know that people who climb out of their perpendicularity aren't actually gods.
They call them little gods.
Yes, naming conventions.
Okay.
Go ahead, okay. Dave.
It's on this side, but in the cognitive realm, they're big. Or medium.
Yeah, they could be larger than expected. Alright, well, Nickley talking about what they're protecting the Cosmere from. Evil forces who would end worlds if they could. They are hunting them. Now that the ancient guardians of Akina are all but extinct, we sleepless must protect it. Dude, I want to know what evil forces are out there, because that's sort of scary if there's more out there than we expect. Well, than what we know.
They're clearly running on investiture, and that's how the ancient guardians of Akina, a.k.a. Chiri Chiri's people.
Yeah.
That's how they were functionally defending, was, oh yeah, you just take out the investiture, and then you could just eat them. They're pretty tasty.
Yeah, but what I'm emphasizing is that there's other evil forces out there that want the Dawn Shard. Like, we haven't seen many external forces when it comes to reading the books. Like, everything sort of, like, it takes place on the planet or something like that. This is sort of a hint. It's like that scene that we get from Sazed when he is protecting Scadrial from something, and it's just this red aura that's surrounding Scadrial. Like, that's sort of intimidating, and we have no idea what the heck it is.
Well, we might have an idea of what the heck it is in about a month or 2 months minus 10 days, so like 50 days.
I hope so.
Wait, is that the next
book? Yeah,
that's The Lost Metal. It's coming out November 15th.
And for you, Dave, that means next year.
You'll so, like, almost certainly it's going to be out by the time this episode airs.
Nice. I hope future me thinks it's a good read.
Wait to not read it.
It's sort of scary, Dave, that you're almost at the point where you're in real time, but it's next year. It's so going to slip out of your hands, because we're going to get 4 books after that, and we have The Lost Metal. So yeah. You were so close to catching up, Dave.
And then we'll have a new reader.
Anyway, let's see. This is Risen and Nickley arguing in chapter 19, saying, like, Risen heard a voice to accept it or whatever it is that happened in last week's chapters. And Nickley's like, no, it did not. The Dawn Shard isn't alive. It doesn't want things. You have stolen it. And Risen knew, or at least felt, he was partially right. It wasn't a living thing that she'd taken upon herself. It was something else, a command. It didn't have a will, and it hadn't led her here or chosen her. But Chiri Chiri had done both. One, I wanted to emphasize that it's a command and not intent. And this is the interesting thing. It doesn't have a will. Like, this is the direct opposite of what we've seen shards and shard holders have.
Where its belongings going to go if it dies?
Where does the command go when Risen dies?
No, where do its earthly possessions go if it doesn't have a will?
Yeah.
See, I get 2 of you guys now. Normally, it's just Mike that comes up with these things.
Yeah, but you've known me for like 5 years. You should know by now.
No, but I mean, now I get both of you when I'm reading the bullet point. But yeah, this is the important thing, because the shards, capital S shards that we've seen, like, they're all intent. They have wills. Like, they are only the will, some aspect of Adonalsia. And it's interesting.
And witches and werewolves shard, where did their earthly possessions go?
I'm moving on. And also, the voice that Risen probably heard in her head earlier was Chiri Chiri and not the Dawn Shard. Because she, you know, she is bonded to Chiri Chiri, so there's definitely something there. Okay. And then now Nickley talking about, like, now that the Dawn Shard's a part of her, fortunately, you would not be able to employ it, Nickley said. It is beyond your capacity. But there are those in the Cosmere who could use it for terrible acts. So it's possible to use Dawn Shards, but if Risen at least can't, for whatever, we don't get the details. And of course, I don't think we're going to get the details from Nickley about why she can't actually use
it. I'm going to throw this out here. I think the Eyrie is one of the groups attempting to get their hands on a Dawn Shard.
Absolutely. Heck yeah, they would. Okay. Next one, once I get to it. Okay. This is Nickley just talking about what they're trading away, and part of it was Soulcasters. The Soulcasters are practically useless to my kind. We keep them out of reverence, as they were offerings to the ancient guardians long ago. So what's up with that?
Ancient guardians are the Chiri Chiris.
Yes, but Soulcasters are useless to the sleepless. They can't use it, even though
stuff, right?
The Soulcasters themselves are supposed to be made that, like, pretty much anyone can use them. But that doesn't appear to be the case, because the sleepless can't use them anyway.
They don't need them. They don't have hands.
They don't. Yes. And also, they were offering the Soulcasters to the Chiri Chiris. Like, I'm sort of curious what they get out of them. Okay. Talking about the Dawn Shard again, Nick Lee laughed. Mere words cannot explain. The Dawn Shards are commands, Risen, the will of a god. And I should probably emphasize it now. As far as we can tell, so that there's an asterisk here, Adonalsium was the one who actually created the Dawn Shards in the first place in order to aid him in creation. So
it shot him.
Yes. Okay. All the greatest applications. Okay, this is surge binding, because the most powerful forms of surge binding transcend traditional mortal understanding. All of their greatest applications require intent and a command. Demands on a level no person could ever manage alone. To make such commands, one must have the reasoning, the breadth understanding of a deity. And so the Dawn Shards, the four primal commands that created all things. He paused. And then eventually they were used to undo Adonalsium itself. It's, you know, it's just the thing that we were just saying. But the important thing is that here's the emphasis on intent and command again. It's more than just a demand that a person has. You have to have a very clear understanding, very clear command, very clear understanding of the intent of what you're trying to achieve. And in the case of Adonalsium, you could do that. And he made the Dawn Shards. And there's four of them. This is where we get that number. And then Cord speaks up at this point. There are songs, Cord said, from long ago of when this command came through the pool. So her people, or at least sort of saw it come through, probably transferred there from, I don't know, the Ancient Guardians or other sleepless. Probably the Ancient Guardians, right? Because they were already there. Someone brought it through the shard pool. Oy. Oh my gosh. I'm so glad we don't call it shard pool anymore, guys. Remember we used to use that term?
I mean, we still can, but then we'd compete with shards and shard plates and shard blades and shard bows and shard hammers and shard spears and dawn shards and splintered shards and shards of Narsil and...
You know, you jumped a series there on us.
It's all Cosmere.
Lord of the Rings is part of the Cosmere, confirmed.
Isn't everything at this point?
Tom Bombadil is Hoyd, obviously.
Okay. No, there is Hoyd. I've told you.
And then Nickley says, Risen, yours is the third Larkin we now know to have survived, but the only one that has grown mature enough to return here. So there's two other Larkin that were like cheery cheery size, but either they didn't make it or they're just new.
Okay. Well, the people that she got cheery cheery from had a dead one that they had traded to Vistim at some point.
Okay. All right. Cord talking to Risen, you did well, she whispered, as well as anyone in the songs when dealing with dangerous gods. But you did not trick him, which I thought was funny because Cord is talking about when you're dealing with a god, you got to trick him. Like she says something like that.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, but you didn't trick him.
Right.
Let's see. Nickley says you can never bond a spren to become a radiant. And also to not tell anyone what has happened to you, Nickley said. Unless you ask us first, I explained to them that humans often need people to confide in. They pointed to Cord as one, but I suggested we might need more. If we're going to maintain the secret and work with humans to protect the Dawn Shard, there could be others we need. Hey, Mike, you know what's happening here? We're making another secret society on Roshar.
Woo! Oh, no!
Yeah, your favorite.
Keep that upgrade that tally, man. This is it. We're getting increase that number by one more. Yeah. So I didn't realize it the first read, but I'm like, oh no, this is another secret society, and Roshar has like I don't know something like 112,000. Stupid, how many they have?
The Ancient and Honorable Order of the Larkin.
The Cheery Cheery Fan Club.
They cheer on someone. Cheerios.
So Cord's like, she's a shard bearer now, And Nickley's like, no, she bears nothing. She is the Dawn Shard now. That is how it works. And that's an important distinction here. She doesn't hold the shard. Same thing as the capital S shards that are running around. They actually hold the shard themselves. But Risen is the Dawn Shard. She has become that Dawn Shard, essentially.
Maybe it's more like the fuse?
So in the case of the fuse, a spren, well, the cognitive shadow is entering the gem heart of the person So I don't think it's quite like that. Wait a
minute. Are you saying Parshendi have gem hearts?
Yeah.
Yes. That's well established.
Are you saying that chasm fiends have gem hearts?
Also well established, yes.
So it's are chasm fiends like Parshendi in some way?
No.
Almost everything on Roshar has a gem heart, except people.
People aren't from Roshar there.
We could talk about that now. Yeah. Anything that's native to Roshar has a gem heart, and humans are not native to Roshar. Therefore, right. No gem heart. Yep, exactly.
All hey, right. do Roshadium have gem hearts?
Oh, I don't think they're. I don't think they're native. That they came with humans because they're horses. But no, hold on. Roshadium, they bred with. Second, I gotta look this up.
They bred with crabs, horse crab hybrids.
Okay, I gotta figure out how to spell Roshadium first.
Roshadium.
Let's see. They are a breed of horse. They're genetically distinct from other horses, but they can mate with horses. And they were descended from horses that were brought to Roshar when humans arrived. So they probably do not have a gem heart.
So there you have it.
I mean, I could be wrong. It could be different. I don't know how long it takes for something to exist on Roshar before it actually gets a gem heart. If that's even a thing that could happen. Like, I have no clue. Anyway. All right. Risen braced herself on the bench, then bowed back. Storm, she thought. What have I done? What you needed to, another part of her thought. You have adapted. You have remade yourself. It's a very changed sort of thing to say, isn't it? Okay. Finally reached the epilogue. This is a Rushu comet. What did it say?
By the way, Rushu, definitely a Chondra. Still standing by that.
Oh, the Lopin's like, I don't know what challenges she passed, and we ended with us so rich. And Rushu's like, yes, I agree. There is something strange about all this, isn't there? She tapped her pen against her lips, then shook her head and walked down to climb into a boat. She's like, who knows? That does seem a little bit weird. So I wanted to highlight this, though, because if she is a Chondra in disguise, that means they're going to be more aware of this whole Dawn Shard business. Now, she doesn't know the actual details of the Dawn Shard, but she does know something weird happened here. And she can report that to Seiza. So, I don't think you were a part of this, Dave, but we were talking about potential Chondra because they actually exist in the books. We're just not fully aware of it. For example, in Warbreaker, the assistant nurse person to Viventa's spy master that they were going to meet with is apparently was a Chondra. Then one of the things I mentioned is like, hey, Ardents are a really good place to hide. I mean, I guess anyone, as we've seen with Zahil, you could just easily hide people. But Ardents in particular, because they shave themselves, and we know that hair, you actually have to take the hair off of a person. And as far as we can tell, since Zayzed has held the Harmony Shard, he doesn't like when Chondra take over other bodies, at least not if they were alive. So that means they're probably making their own bodies, which means they have to get hair a different way. So Ardents, super easy to make your own person with, because you only need eyebrows.
There's also one of Taravangian's bodyguards. I don't remember if we talked to you about this, but one of Taravangian's bodyguards is noted to not have any hair or eyebrows. And we're pretty sure that dude's a Chondra.
Know there's a Chondra in the diagram. Like, I think that's a word of Brandon. That there is a Chondra in the diagram.
How did the Chondra get on the roof?
The roof?
Get to the other side?
Okay.
How did they get on Roshar?
Same way as anything else. Through the chart, or through the perpendicularities.
So what's the deal? Like, preservation's just like... Not preservation. Harmony's just like... Harmony. Just like, yeah. I'll interfere with everyone, spy on him.
He's not... Well, number one, he didn't say no interference at all. Like, he never made that agreement. So, yeah.
That's true, because he wasn't an original shard bearer. I guess also, did he send the Chondra there, or did maybe a little earlier send them there?
I believe we're explicitly told in Shadows of Self that all the Chondra are working directly for Harmony. Except for Bleeder.
Yeah. And we know at this point...
Shadows of Self?
Yeah, that was
Shadows of Self, okay.
Shadows of Self, yeah.
I think you said Shadows for Self, which made me think of Shadows for Silence. I got it mixed up.
If I said Shadows for Self, I meant Shadows of Self. If I said Shadows of Silence, I meant Shadows for Silence.
Clear. Very clear, Mike. It's perfect.
Got it.
Yeah, so the point is, Contra, as far as we know, Sazed's sending him out to get a pulse on the Cosmere. So yeah, I mean, they're not necessarily interfering either. They're just sort of spying and trying to gather information. They're laying low-ish. Alright, of course I highlighted this. I'll do it then, Lopin said, standing up. I've got to protect people, you know, even from myself, which is in Dave's as well. But of course I'm going to highlight that. We got to highlight his words. But there was a discussion. Yes, Mike?
It's also a level of introspection that you don't see in any of those other things that I mentioned that, like, his banter would fit extremely well in. Like, at no point during, like, military fantasy combat banter do they stop afterward and be like, was I too mean? I might have been too mean there.
Well, he did it. He definitely did it. All right. And something else. This sort of came up before. It's certainly earlier in the book. There was this impression that the third ideal should be about hate. And I know you talked about this a little bit, Dave, that it's, I should protect those that I hate, because that's what Kaladin swore. But as we've said time and again, the ideals are specific to the person. The notion is the same thing that Kaladin had to say, just because that was how difficult it was for him at the time. But yeah, in Lopin's case, he had to realize that maybe he could be a little much sometimes. And learning that and accepting it, then yeah, that's his ideal.
The actual core of the ideal is, I will protect people even in a worst case scenario for me personally.
Yep. All right. This is my last one. This is Risen Perspective Storms. Was it her, or did this tea taste extra good? She inspected it. Oh my gosh, sorry guys. My voice is going. She inspected it. Why can't I say this word? She inspected it.
She inspectigated it.
Gadgeted it.
It's something about it following it that just made it difficult. Then glanced at the sunlight pouring through the porthole. Was it brighter than usual? Why did the colors in her room look so exceptionally vivid all of a sudden?
Gosh, that sounds a lot like she's, I don't know, like fifth heightening-ish?
Yeah, that it does. I mean, if she legit reached fifth heightening, isn't that, you don't age?
Yeah, no aging. And for the returned, at least, it's like you can subtly change your, you can shapeshift, basically, based on how you think you should look. Which, like, Risen might be able to, might not, like, she probably is able to, but she might not actually do it because she doesn't know she can.
Yeah, there's, the Returned are aware that they could change their appearance, that they sort of set it, and that changes over time anyway, so yeah.
Like, Vasher could almost certainly shave and then 5 minutes later be scruffy 5 o'clock shadow, because that's just how he sees himself.
All right, like so that was one it for scene, my bullet points.
Like that one scene from Tim Allen's The Santa Claus.
Yep, real life.
Oh god, Santa Claus is returned.
Or they just have, no. He has a lot of investiture.
It made me think of, there's a scene in the old Interview with the Vampire movie where the little girl vampire, Claudia, I think?
Kirsten Dunst, yeah.
Yeah, Kirsten Dunst is like, fine, and just cuts off all of her hair, and then like it immediately grows back. So maybe Santa Claus is a vampire.
Which is not canonical to the book. They have to go to sleep and wake up. Then their hair comes back.
What if Mike is onto something and Santa Claus is actually a fuse? So Tim Allen, I don't know the character's name, but he sees
Scott
the other
Calvin.
Santa die.
Santa.
And then suddenly he just inherits all these powers. He's totally a fuse. And the other Santa Claus inhabited his body and he became Santa Claus.
I mean, that's closer to like demonic possession. So Santa is a demon.
Yeah.
Has anyone done an exercise Santa Claus movie?
That sounds pretty interesting.
What does that mean?
A demonic exorcism. Old priest and a young priest. You vomit pea soup. Head spins around backwards.
But for Santa.
You walk around on your hands and like hands and feet, but upside down, and you say stuff in German.
Yeah, exorcism. Yeah.
Has anyone done a movie of that? Because I would like to watch that movie.
Same.
You know, there's probably someone out there somewhere that actually has made this.
Although, now that I think about it, this falls under, like, Velocipaster and Rubber of concepts that could never work as well as I'm imagining them. Like, are you guys familiar with Velocipaster or Rubber?
I've heard of Laser Raptors.
Okay, Velocipaster. You can look this up. Just look at, like, the IMDb summary. It's something like a Catholic priest transforms into a Velociraptor and fights ninjas.
Oh, it sounds cool.
Yeah, like, in actual practice, it's probably terrible. And then Rubber is the soul of a serial killer inhabits a tire, and it goes around killing people.
What?
Oh,
why?
Indeed.
There's that evil truck movie where
Maximum Overdrive, directed by Stephen King. He does not remember any of the production of this film because he was high the whole time.
Yeah, so that already exists. Why do we need an evil tire as well?
Because it's a cooler concept.
Okay. Can we talk about Cosmere now?
We are, Craig. We always have been.
It's all Cosmere.
So, Dave, what'd you think of the book?
It was pretty cool. Honestly, like, the Lopin speech patterns were kind of annoying by the end of it. I liked Risen's character. I think it didn't really make me appreciate the Lopin more, but it did make me appreciate Risen more, so.
I think it works kind of like with Lyft, where if you get a bunch of Lyft or the Lopin all in one go, it's too much. But if you get a little bit of them spread out throughout a book, it's way better.
Yeah.
I think the Lopin definitely falls in that category, definitely. Although,
I liked Lyft, though. Like, when we got more Lyft in Lyft book.
When Lyft called Daladar tight butt.
That is a good part. I was going to say, I didn't really care for Lyft until Edge Dancer.
That's what I'm saying. Like, Edge Dancer made me appreciate Lyft more, but this book didn't really make me appreciate Lopin more, which is kind of what I expected.
Well, the Lopin I already liked before. That's what I was getting at. Like, I liked him before, and I liked his scenes in this book, but I don't think I noticed his speech pattern the first time we read it through, because it was this time where I noticed he does say sure a lot. But you also notice that Huyo also does it. It's something about the Herdazian speech pattern. It's not the Lopin himself, but it's just Herdazians in general. This is how they talk.
I agree, Sewell. Colo.
Yep.
Colos.
All right. What do you think this means for Cosmere? Does this help with your theory crafting, I guess? I don't know. Hey, I got a better question. Dave, we speculated about this way back when right before the preview chapters of Rhythm War were coming out. What do you think Rhythm of War will be about?
It's going to be, you already told me that it's written from the perspective of, oh no, we get background chapters of
Eshenai.
Eshenai, yeah, he's dead, so.
Maybe.
No, let's not do this. Eshenai's dead.
Yeah, Eshenai's super dead.
Saw her friend give up on her and move on to her sister, like, she's dead.
I don't want to Yasna this.
If Spren could give up on people and pick new people, like, arbitrarily like that, we know Windle would have done it.
It's true.
No, you're right. Eshenai is super dead. So the flashback chapters are Eshenai and Venli.
Both of them, okay.
But outside of that, anything else do you think that we're gonna basically, it doesn't have to be what the overall plot is, because that's gonna be really hard to guess, but is there anything that you think will happen, you know, somewhere in the course of the book?
I think we'll get more info on Dalinar's powers. I think that's going to be pretty interesting. Also, I want to see more from Set. I think Set's probably one of the most interesting characters in the series so far.
Ashweather Set? What?
Yeah, Kelsier Kaladin.
Kelsier and Kaladin would not get along at all.
Brandon, other letters exist for you to name protagonists with. Please. Okay, but who did you actually... I'm not sure who you're talking about.
I think he meant Seth.
Seth. Did I say Set?
You did say Seth.
No, I meant
Seth. If you mean the Set, then we're going to go back the Mistborn error two here. The clear down mic.
Yeah.
I meant Seth. Also, like, now that Seth and Reshi girl are like buddies now, I think that's gonna be really interesting. Like, they're gonna play off each other pretty cutely, I think.
They're gonna be odd couple roommates. He's very neat and she is very messy.
No, Reshi.
She leaves her food sitting out and he does all the dishes, and Nightblood's there.
Yeah, Nightblood is like the neighbor that is kind of like the glue that holds them together.
Now that's a sitcom I want to see.
All right, I feel like we've done an episode.
Yes, yeah. I really have.
This right. Well of a sitcom has run a laundress.
So, just for our listeners, we are continuing with Rhythm of War next week, and that means Tori has to post the schedule, I guess.
Oh, I do. That's a thing I have to do.
Yep, Rhythm of War next week.
You at least have to tell us how many chapters to read.
For those of you listening live, the next two episodes that I put out are actually going to be what were recorded to be patron-only episodes. So it will be another couple of weeks before we actually start Rhythm of War. Not Rhythm of War. This book. This one. Not Edge Dancer. The other one. Dawn Shard. In the main feed. But if you're listening to this 2 months from now, ignore this part, because that already happened. Bye, Dawn everybody. Shard.
Hi, everybody.
Good this night, Internet.
Hi, everybody.
Yeah.
This has been the Cosmere Deep Dive Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at CosmereCast or like us on Facebook. Our theme music is Traveling Made Up Continents by Gillicuddy, used with permission. Hear more from him at the Free Music Archive. Thanks for listening.